Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
Hello, and welcome to Volume 2 of the Best of the Steve Austin Show. This is Steve's producer, Sean, here to introduce this episode, where we'll be focusing on some of the funnier moments from the Steve Austin Show over the years. Specifically, we'll be hearing from comedians Bill Burr, we'll be hearing from Gabriel Iglesias, as well as the one and only Ted Fowler, 361, in a memorable Q&A session with Steve on the Broken Skull Ranch. Before we get to that, let me tell you about Hims. Hims is the wellness brand for the modern man, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness, making men's personal care trusted, easy, and affordable. Hims offers FDA-approved medical-grade products, personalized recommendations, plus convenient, confidential online consultation with a licensed doctor. There's no pharmacy lines, no waiting room. The products are shipped directly to your door. And Hims passes big savings along to you, offering prescription and generic for just a fraction of the price. Sound treatment and prevention backed by medicine and science. Look better, feel better, do better with Hims. For listeners of the Steve Austin Show, get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 while supplies last. This would cost you hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor's office or pharmacy. So what are you waiting for? Save some damn money and save your damn hair. Just go to forhims.com/unleashed for all the details. That's forhims.com/unleashed and stomp a mud hole into hair loss and walk it dry. One more time, that's forhims.com/unleashed to get yourself a trial month for just $5.
Hi everyone, I'm Lauren Sanchez.
And I'm Susie Schuster. Get ready, because each week Lauren and I are going to be talking about the biggest stories in sports on our new podcast, Locker Room Talk.
You've never heard a sports show like this one before. We're going to cover what is happening in the sports world with a flair that only women can bring.
Yeah, this is what we call real Locker Room Talk. Don't forget to download each new episode every Thursday.
You can listen to Locker Room Talk for free exclusively on Apple Podcast at PodcastOne.com and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend. And of course, leave us a rating and a review.
Oh, you'll love it.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
I've been around long enough and, you know, I'm pretty skeptical. I dig technology, but I used to spend my life on the road, 15 years. I've driven all over the United States of America. We go to foreign countries, we get on buses because the driving laws are all f***ed up over and you're driving around right. The road. But over here, Rick Rude, Ravishing Rick Rude. Are you a wrestling fan?
Big time.
So Ravishing Rick Rude, we should say, God damn it, Steve, arrive alive. So that's, we always try to get to the places safe and sound and perform in front of the people, put on a goddamn good show, and get on to the next rodeo. So I ain't going to trust no machine to guide me, because I was real picky about who I would let drive the car. Right. Like Mick Foley, love the guy to death. Don't let him drive. Diamond Dallas Page, one of my best friends. Don't let him drive.
No, because they drive too aggressively or this too.
Not just Mick. And I love him. He's one of my best friends. But just,
having said that.
You just don't trust him behind a wheel. I don't know if he is distracted. He's one of the smarter guys in the business. If I always wanted a good opinion, I'd go to Mick Foley. Right. Kevin Nash, good wheel man. Badass Billy Gunn, good wheel man. Okay, all of a sudden, you got the Tesla, you dial in, hey, here's your destination. I'm going to trust this GPS system, because when I moved to L.A., I remember I had the Garmin thing they used to put on my windshield. And Garmin would be telling me where to go. So they've advanced the whatever the GPS thing is to drive his car. I ain't trusting that motherfucker to get me where I'm going. I got to have the steering wheel in my hands, Bill. Maybe it's a control issue. But like, it's like when you punch in the directions on your iPhone and Siri's telling me where to go and what to turn on. I can dig that. She can get me there, but I got the steering wheel in my hand. So
I had to switch it to a guy's voice.
Oh, so you didn't like the girl telling you what to do?
Because I thought that was some subversive feminism shit for me to get used to taking orders from a woman. I didn't like it. I used to find myself fighting it, like skipping streets and everything. Yeah. Every once in a while, just be like, you know, just to keep it even. So now it's just like a guy's voice, and I don't have that. I got major like control issues too, when it comes to that stuff. And I think technology was fine right up till 1995. Somewhere in the 90s, we had it right.
Right.
And then that's it. Okay. And you know. I know there's advances in medical and that type of stuff over the last, whatever, 20 years or so, but like, it's not, in the long run, it's not helping everybody. You know, we're just living too long. People got to die. People got to get out of the, whatever the magic number is of human beings that can be on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're over it by a good, I don't know, 4 or 5 billion.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Well, you said you don't like to read. Or you don't read much.
I'm not good at it.
It
takes me like an hour to read like 5 pages because every word reminds me. I have ADD, so I just start thinking about stuff and I'll just go on some journey in my head as I continue like reading but not retaining anything. And then I'm like, what the f*** just happened? How am I on page 30? That's basically
it. Yeah, because you don't remember the first 29. That's the same thing I do.
There's some shit that I like. I like to read. If it's like, I'm good about autobiographies. Like, you got all this, you know, the Stevie Ray Vaughan stuff. Like, I any stuff on him, I would be totally focused, riveted, reading that. But if it was like, you know, back in the day, if I had like a book report and they just said, read this fucking book, I'd just be like, I hated it. Absolutely hated it. So I was good at screwing around in class and, somehow I turned that into a living.
Hey, did you, God dang, you went to college, right?
Yeah, I went to a bunch of colleges.
But you got a degree. You got a degree in what?
Communications.
What did they teach you in communication? Because obviously you're great at it. You're one of the funniest cats that goes around doing stand up.
I don't remember. It was a fun. Like, I finished at Emerson. I went to like 2 other ones. Was accepted to another one, and I just, by the time I was like 22, 23, I was still a freshman. I was going part time. I had to pay for it myself. You know, working my way through college and stuff, and. I don't remember. I went to that school and I finally just, it was like a performance school and shit. I could do stuff on the radio. But, I wanted to ask you just as far as being a wrestling fan. I mean, you asked me when I was I a wrestling fan? I watched it hardcore from like 78 to right up early 90s, right when I started doing stand up. And then like I missed everything because when you guys were on, you know, the big stuff, I was out. Doing stand up. So I missed like all of Seinfeld. Like I didn't see any of that until it went into reruns. I missed a bunch of sports in the '90s and all that. And I remember in the late '90s, the late great Patrice O'Neill.
Yeah.
And he's the great, him and Mitch Hedberg to me with it in David Tell.
I'm glad you brought Mitch Hedberg.
Those like, when people always say like, man, you're like the funniest guy out there. It's like, yeah, because like the top 5 guys aren't here anymore. If they were back, you know, I'd be featuring at an improv. So. In the late '90s, I was living with another comic, Robert Kelly, and him and Patrice were really into wrestling. And that's when you and The Rock brought it back. And like all of what I've always admired about all you guys, because I never understood the amount of pain you were going through, was how goddamn funny all the characters were. And, I mean, all the way from like, you know, Captain Lou Albano to Mr. Wonderful, you know, Rowdy Piper, all of these guys. I used to watch all of those guys and just laugh my ass off watching them. And then when you guys came along, you guys took it to a whole other level. And I always felt you guys were like prolific. Like each week when you thought you had all your guys' catchphrases down, you came up with new stuff. And we used to, me and Bobby would watch it and we'd have Patrice on speakerphone. He was living in New Jersey and me and Bobby were living in like this walk-through bedroom apartment. And we would sit in the living room on his pull-out bed. Obviously he'd, you know, fold the thing up during the day and we'd watch it on this little kitchen TV and just waiting to hear what you guys were going to say and all the different storylines and stuff. It was great, man.
You know, I had so much fun doing that shit and finally I had to ride off into the sunset with injuries and stuff like that. And so, although it is entertainment, it's a rough ride in there, or can be.
The best thing that happened was once they just said, this is sports entertainment, then you guys could actually talk about the real pain that, you know, people just look at, because when they were thinking, oh, you know, it's worked out, it's fake or whatever. But it's like, dude, that guy still has to take a chair to the head at like whatever 3/4 speed. Do you want to do that or jump off a top rope and land or get slammed on your back? Like, I couldn't believe what I saw Hulk Hogan one time. So first time I saw him was in the airport, and then I saw him when he did the Opie and Anthony show. And I remember going like, man, I thought he was tall. I thought he was like 6'7". But like his arms hung way down to like his knees. And he said, I used to be 6'7". But after all those years of his finishing move, jumping up with the leg coming down, he lost 3 inches of height.
You know, here's the thing about Hogan. And I always give that guy a ton of respect because he had a tremendous run. You think something so simple as just jumping up and dropping that leg. Here's the great thing about that leg. First of all, it worked. It looked good. He was charismatic as hell, had a great look. But anybody could take that finish. So when you come up with a finish in pro wrestling, you want it to be something that everybody can take. So if it's a bunch of damn, you know, crazy toss around, whirly gigs, you know, and it's acrobatic.
Right.
Hey, not everybody can take that, but anybody can lay there and get a leg dropped on them. Well, my point is, when you're 6'6", you're 320, when you drop that leg for 30 years, man, it's like interest. It compounds daily,
yeah.
Especially as you get up on it in the years. So, you know, he's paying the price of that. Just a simple leg drop. And, you know, there was times, dude, my finish was a Stone Cold Stunner. So sometimes I'd go to TV on a Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw, Bill, was like therapy for me because it was like, okay, yeah, I get all my shit out.
It's we
like
used to take that night off of stand-up. Yeah. Me, Bobby, and Priest, we would take the night off. We'd have him on speaker. I remember one time I think he actually made the journey all the way in from Jersey just to watch it. And all three of us sitting on that little couch, we ordered like Chinese food. It was the greatest, man.
Sometimes you go to the building, like, hey, Steve, he would give you about, you know, 6 or 8 stunners tonight. You know, bam, the hero's going to come down to the ring, give him a stunner, give this guy a stunner, give his, and like, God damn, my back's all fucked up. But you're not going to say, well, Vince, my back's kind of fucked up. I better take a night off.
Right.
You're out there ringing up stunners with a fucked up back. So it catches up to you.
It seems a lot like pro football where their thing is always like, can you go is the question. And there's only one answer to that or else you're out the door and someone else is going to take your job. So. I don't know. I remember one night, me and Bobby, we were gonna. Thank God we didn't go through with it. There was this old comedy club, the Boston Comedy Club, and it people used to always joke it looked like an old like ski lodge that sort of burned down. I mean, it was a shithole. Had this wooden stage, small one too. And we were talking one night, and he was gonna do the Rock's finishing move. What was that? The Rock Bottom? Is that what it's called? Yeah. He was going to do that to me, or I was going to do it to him. And fortunately, I mean, I was already like 30 years old during that time. That would have fucked me up. He was somehow going to do it. And we were going to get into some phony argument on like a Tuesday night, like with 8 people there. And he was going to pick me up and slam me down. We were going to try to work the whole thing out. And fortunately, we actually... Just because you remember when you were a kid and you try to do all the wrestling moves to your friend the first time? First time I remember doing the Polish hammer and you didn't know not to interlock your fingers. You'd slam it to your little buddy's chest and all your fingers felt like they broke off. And we didn't understand like all of those things. I fortunately had like, you know, 3 younger brothers. So, I could, you know, try out the airplane spin, everybody's move. But I remember the first time first 2 times I really fucked up my back. 4th grade, this kid put me in a figure 4 leg lock because he was trying to show me how to do it. And he got me into it. And then all the kids started going nuts. And he kind of was like into the crowd cheering. He wasn't letting me out of it. So I got up to try to undo the leg and I felt a pull on my lower back. That was 4th grade. And then the first time I messed up my upper back was Tony Atlas inspired. His finishing move was to put you up over the head. And I picked up my brother, who was about 4 years younger than me, and I went to pick him up over my head. I swear to God, it felt like my spine bent. And I got about halfway over my head. I still remember where I was at. I was in the living room. So fortunately, there was a rug because when I had to drop him immediately, he was crying because he fucked up his shoulder. You know, so that's the funny thing. So everybody's sitting there going, yeah, wrestling's fake. It's like, really? When I do it, I still get hurt. So.
Well, it's funny because on your Twitter account, at Bill Burr, there's a picture of you and Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Arguably one of the funniest dudes who ever lived.
Oh, goddamn, he's hilarious, and he's my favorite pro wrestler of all time. But my point is, it plays back into your story about being in the figure four. Bill, next time you get put in the figure four, don't try to unlace your legs.
You
just
roll
over. You reverse the pressure.
Which way do I...
Either way, whether all you got to do is go belly down, and it puts the pressure on him. Allegedly. That's how it works. So just
do you know how cool it is 40 years later? To hear it from Stone Cold Steve Austin, this is how you get out of the figure four. I'm gonna teach my wife how to put me in it, see if it works.
You go, dude. Just go get on YouTube. Go push Flair versus Steamboat, and watch him put Steamboat in that figure four. And all of a sudden, Ricky will get that crowd. He's getting that crowd. Goddamn, he's almost got him. And finally, turns it over, and the pressure goes to Ric Flair, and he goes to the ropes. So now he's selling the leg just like Steamboat selling the leg. So. There's no reason why, you know, kinesiologically or anatomically, why rolling over would reverse the pressure. But that was the story.
Yeah.
So tell me about starting off, dude, because you said you got 3 brothers, right?
I have 4 brothers.
4 brothers.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, were you the funniest guy in the family? Were you always funny?
No, I was not. No, my older brother was 10 times, still is 10 times funnier than me. Everybody in like, I grew up in the, you know, the suburbs of Boston and I just everybody was funny. I can't explain it. There's something basically about the New York, Boston all the way down to like Jersey area, tri-state area and all in there. There's everybody's like a character. But there's something about Boston where it's just like, I don't know, if you watch those reality shows, more times than not, at least the ones that my wife watches, those Survivors and stuff, there's always some Boston lunatic, you know, he's got the crazy accent. They're just a bunch of characters there. So I just think everybody, you know, was so funny growing up that you just sort of like absorb it. And there was all big families and stuff, and like fighting was accepted back then, and drinking and driving
wasn't like, no, I used to fight. Good old days, a fist fight.
Yeah. My parents, the rule was don't hit each other in the face. It was like hit each other from here to here. That was considered working it out amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
I remember my mother one time tried to smash a brush over my head because my brother said I kicked my other brother in the face, which was bullshit. I kicked him in the stomach. I don't know why to this day he said that. So my mother was brushing her hair. She had this big, like the 70s plastic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's the fairest of them all? Brush. So she turned around and smashed me in the head. And I like did that pussy duck, basically. You put your shoulders up and go. And she caught me right in the middle of the back, right? And the whole, it would have been great for wrestling. The whole thing, the whole brush exploded. And my mother was like, you know, we had so many kids or just so cheap. I just remember she just picked up like the brush part. And for like the next 10 years, she was just holding the brush part. And every once in a while, I'd catch her using it. I'd just be like, you know, I would still be pleading my case going, I kicked him in his, it was his chest. I think that's why my brother had a bad angle. It was like a quick play at the plate or something. He had a bad angle. He thought I kicked him in the face. I didn't. To this day, I'll go to my grave denying that.
Dude, the thing, if you popped off to my mom and she happened to be in the kitchen, she had one of those wooden spoons in her hand and she got you cornered.
Oh, yeah.
She was going to wear your ass out with a wooden spoon and she'd break them. And my dad just go get more wooden spoons. So
my grandmother broke
don't
one.
Don't talk shit to your mom when she got a wooden spoon. That was my deal. I learned that real fast.
My grandmother tried to break one over my head, but I got my arm up quick enough and it snapped. I kept messing up this rug, which wasn't looking a little throw rug. And she kept going like, who keeps messing this up? So it became like this game. And she went in the kitchen and she stopped real quick and looked back out. And she caught me messing it up. And she, dude, turned into the devil, just came flying at me like it was a hatchet.
Yeah.
And I just put my arm up. It was really weird because I only saw her a few times a year. So it was kind of like a stranger coming at me. And it snapped over my forearm. And then she just went, wow, that's the end of that spoon. And that was it. Went out and bought another one. My other grandfather used it to, you remember the 70s refrigerators? We had the side-by-side. He couldn't handle the fact that we just kind of went in there and got something to eat whenever we wanted to. So he jammed the thing in there so we couldn't open it. So we were sitting there starving. Just an ornery guy.
What?
Just jerry-rigged this thing. We couldn't get anything to eat.
Okay, so we're going back to your stand-up deal because on, you know, in researching, it says you started in 92.
Yep.
But you probably had to, you were testing shit out before then. What makes you decide to just turn pro and start in 92 on the stand-up career?
There is no turning pro as a comedian. It's just, you just get thrown in the deep end. It's not like you can't like try out material. It was a talent contest. This place, Nick's Comedy Stop, which still exists, which is crazy because I've been doing it for 24 years, that the place that I stepped on stage first still exists. Nick's Comedy Stop had a contest, Find Boston's Funniest Comedy Student. And it was just basically, you know, a big hype thing to get a bunch of college kids in there drinking, watching their friends go up and bomb. And I saw it and I just immediately called the number before I chickened out, before I really had to think about it. I do remember vaguely sitting down trying to write material and you're just sitting there going like, how do you do this? Like, I've always been funny in class, but like funny just happened. You just sort of improv in your whole life. Like, you know, you see something, you make a joke, you make people laugh, you throwing shit in or whatever. But now I'm going to sit down and artificially create this moment. Like, how do I get to the funny and stuff? And, you know, that took a while. Definitely took a while.
But is that like, I mean, I would imagine it's just like some of the guys, I watch History of the Eagles. Were you a big Eagles fan?
Yeah, I worked in a warehouse, so they played it. It got to the point they played them so much that there was a few groups that I had to take like a decade break from.
Right.
They were one of them. Zeppelin.
Yeah.
The Eagles, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. We had like classic hits on. It was the guys who worked in the warehouse also played in a band, and they played a lot of that classic rock stuff. So they listened to that. WZLX is what it was, and they played that shit from like 9 in the morning till 5 at night, and it got to the point of like, I can't listen to this stuff anymore.
Yeah, I can get you on the decades off stuff because they hit them so hard for so long. I need a little break myself. But and listen to how those guys learned how to start writing songs, it was an interesting process. So here you are, you're coming out of communications, you get on the stage, you're going to write this, your first gig.
I was not communicating.
I
know. when I got on stage, the communication was not going well.
So did you win the gig, or how long was your first set?
It was supposed to be 5 minutes, and I think I did like three, and I bailed. I made fun of the host, and then I just got off. Like my first time doing stand-up, and I would say this to anybody who's getting into it, like the first, 10, 20 times you do it, it has nothing to do with how well, good or bad you're doing. All it has to do with is when they call your name, having the balls to go back up there. I'll go up there the first time. That's all it is. Like, and I just was joking with the buddy Rogan. I was joking with him, just going like, I am so glad YouTube did not exist when I was going through my, am I the next Bill Hicks phase? You know what I mean? Yeah. There is a phase that a lot of comics go through, myself included, where you think, hey, am I going to be the guy with the leather jacket smoking the cigarette? Telling them how it is, it's sort of like, and everybody, whether you had the jacket and the cigarette, tried that hat on for a minute. And thank God, I know they exist somewhere. The footage is on a VHS tape somewhere in the back of one of my closets, but it'll never see the light of day, right?
But when you hit the stage and all of a sudden you start getting booked, I mean, what's the dues paying process? Are you working another job on the side?
It's a lot like when I read books on I've read all you guys' books. Like one of my favorite ones was Ric Flair, To Be the Man, You Gotta Beat the Man. I own that in hardcover. Like I read all of those things. And the stuff that I related to the most was the dishonest promoters and being in a car with another performer and laughing and joking and having beers afterwards. But obviously the level of physical pain and the shit that you guys went through is way beyond. Our stuff is more just absolute humiliation. Just like, there's still sometimes, I will think about stuff that happened to me when I was on stage. It always happens when I'm in the shower. I don't know why. And it's just some of the, where I just got so owned by a crowd and had no comeback and just how embarrassed I was. And there's always friends in the crowd when it happened. Every once in a while, when those memories come up, I literally have to shout it out of my brain. Like, I'll just be in the shower. My wife will be down the hall and she just hear me go like, oh. And then she'll be in the kitchen going like, are you okay? I'll be like, so I just, my back.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and get big ups to True Car. Now, if you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for. But what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. Hey, it's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Hey, you're also going to need car insurance for that new vehicle. Go to GEICO.com and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to The Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Steve, have just half of a shot of JD with you. We killed a whole bottle of Patron.
Now see, this is no stop. I'm about to lose my motherfucking temper here. You roll into my crib with a gang.
A gang? It's two white guys and a Mexican.
I don't give a shit how many white guys and a Mexican it is.
It's not a gang. It's all white people. It's a fraternity.
You roll up in a 300 with gold wing doors. It's a gang. And now you're forcing me. I know there's nobody physically touching me, but you're forcing me to drink tequila and Jack Daniels.
I love the fact that you're telling your audience that Gabriel Iglesias, the fluffy comedian, is forcing you to drink.
I mean, I'm one of the most famous beer drinkers in world history. A global icon, in fact.
Yes, you are.
And I'm being forced to drink by a young whippersnapper comedian named Gabriel Iglesias. Pour up, motherfucker.
All right, here we go. And now the skull
have
looks
a shot.
Cool.
Whoa, that's
now
good.
The skull looks cool.
This motherfucker's crazy.
You thought you were going to get freaking bells and whistles right now. No, you didn't realize.
I was going to read a couple of the text messages that I sent. He's talking about bringing some people over here. And I sent him a text message. I said, man, we're going to have to strip search you guys before you leave. And he goes, my guys are down with that.
You don't even know.
You know,
Steve.
Jay, that true story before we do this shot. I called DDP a while ago. You was running a little bit late. I'm just kidding you. I called DDP a while ago. This is a true story. He's out in Ventura doing a movie.
Mm-hmm. And, him and Jake.
Him and Jake. Jake's already done his part. And so I called him. I said, no, dude, you know, I said, this Gabe, he's cool, right? He goes, what do you mean he's cool? I said, man, you know, he's cool. He can take a rib, right? He goes, yeah, man, you'll love this guy. So, you know, I had some, you know, material for you. I didn't know I was going to put the real pink flamingos out there and just some bullshit. I didn't know what kind of guy you was. And you show up with all this fucking swag, merchandise, alcohol. I'm like a kid in a candy store. Swigging Jack Daniels for the working man.
You know, the crazy part is I got a show in about 6 hours, Steve.
Where are you working tonight?
Ontario, here in California. And it's cool. I'm doing a show tonight called, Fluffy Fan Appreciation Day. And I'll do this about four times a year where I'll either take 500 people to breakfast. I'll do a free show. I'll take people to, events, you know, cause I'm very lucky. Money is not the issue. I'm good with money, but you can always use more fans. You can always give back. You can always show people your appreciation. And so I do this Fluffy Fan Appreciation. Like I said, I'll take people to breakfast. And tonight is, I'm doing a free show. I'm doing a free show for people out in Ontario, California at a comedy club where I first started off doing stand up. And so, the first 400 people that show up get in for free. And I already got text messages from the comedy club manager. He goes, dude, like 1,000 people showed up trying to get in. And so they're handing out wristbands. And so we'll go out there tonight and we'll do a free show and then hang out, do a meet and greet. And
how many would
people,
I think
people
see?
People love that.
Yeah. Oh, you damn right.
People love that.
Yeah.
You know,
and when you give back.
When you give back and you don't expect nothing for it, you know, I mean, I got calls from the radio station. I didn't want to go on the radio. I just set everything up through Twitter and Facebook and said, hey, all right, I'm just going direct with the fans. And they love it, man.
Hey, man, so how many people will the place ultimately see?
They'll stuff about 400 people in.
Right.
And fortunately, I got a good relationship with the police department
and the fire department.
Yeah. And we could talk about this now because it'll air tomorrow. But, yeah, they'll push the envelope.
Right. Hey, man, I thought you was going to roll in here, man, and I just figured, hey, man, this is a funny dude, and you got your posse. You got all the swag. You turned this into a machine.
You know what?
Are you a fan at all of the rock band Kiss?
Yes. You know what? Gene Simmons is a genius for so many reasons,
right?
Because you know what? He took a brand and he ran with it. I'm a big fan of Gene Simmons. I'm a big fan of Marvel, and I'm a huge fan of WWE. Now, I brought this up earlier, and I don't know if it's a sore subject with you, but you know what? I model my shows, my merchandising, and my way of doing business around the way that the WWE handles themselves. My merchandising is, everything is detailed. Everything is well packaged. Nothing about my packaging says this is at a flea market. This is at a swap meet. Everything is as gold down to the barcode,
right,
to the name, to the brand, to the logos. I cover every aspect of it. The plush action figures, the fact that it talks, the t-shirts. I mean, I have a whole warehouse full of merchandise and I take all that on the road with me. My merchandising accounts were probably 25% of my business. And you know what? If you brand yourself the right way, in which case the WWE does, including my show, When I walk out on stage, I have a stage show. It's not just a curtain, a stool, and a mic. I walk out and there's a show. There's screens. There's freaking, there's trusses. There's lights. There's a production crew. There's a semi truck that brings all this stuff in. And so when I walk out on stage, I go, hey, you guys, check it out. I go, it's like WWE meets the Food Network. I said, I'm not messing around. You guys are getting a show tonight.
Right.
And I give the crowd a good show. And when I'm done, I go back out on stage and I'm like, you guys want more? You want to keep this going or you want to go home? We want more. Well, let's do some more. And I'm going back and forth with the people, and I just want to give them the best show possible.
Yeah. And give them the money's worth and make them want to come back next time you come back in town.
Mm-hmm.
But how long did it take you to put this machine together? Because you talked about paying your dues early on and building this up. So now with this action figure, the doll that I got that you gave me, the hoodie with the speakers built in for the headset, how long did it take to put this machine together to start coming out with this product? Because it's badass. And, dude, if I'm telling you it's badass, it's a shit because I don't talk about nothing.
In the beginning, when I first started making merchandise, my first product was a CD of my comedy show. Right. It was a 45-minute CD. It cost me 89 cents to package and have an actual disc made. And I'd turn around and I'd sell it for 20 and I'd autograph it. Right. In my head, I'm like, you know what? It doesn't get better than this. I'm paying 89 cents for a disc and I'm selling it for 20. This is all I need. And then my buddy, Martin Moreno, who's on the shows with me.
I've been hearing
my
host.
Yeah. He goes, you know what, bro? He goes, people like t-shirts more than they like CDs. I go, yeah, but you know what, man? A t-shirt costs anywhere from $4 to $7. Why am I going to spend $4 to $7 for something that's going to return $20 when I can spend 89 cents? He goes, because people will buy 3 to 4 times that amount.
Right.
And then I tried it. And then that first shirt that I put out there that said, I'm not fat, I'm fluffy, blew up. In the first year, I was able to take my little trunk operation, and it took over my garage at home. Right. Next thing I know, I had a call up, and I had to actually rent a warehouse space. The warehouse space blew up, and then I had to get a double wide. Now I bought a building, so now it's like it just boom, 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 boom. Right. And it's just one of those keep repeating. Keep reproducing, keep repeating. If it works, keep repeating it. If it doesn't work, take it away, find something else, and just do that.
Right. Man, let me ask you a question. I mean, just I'm a big fan of comedy. I just love it. Love laughing. You know, I made a good living, you know, being a tough guy on TV. But I always tell people I'd rather laugh my ass off all day than
I'll tell you, Steve, you're one of the wittiest, funniest people I've ever met. And I'm not just saying that because I'm in front of you right now. I've been showing the text messages you sent me to my girl and to my friends. I'm like, this dude, oh my God, they did not allow him to live up to his total full potential because he's so witty.
Well, you know, that was with the parameters of being
and
my question was, you know, when I read, you know, and see, you know, so many comedians that have died at a young age, through, you know, whatever reason, Mitch Hedberg and some guys, you know, Sam Kinison, bad deal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a lot of pro wrestlers have died at a young age. But so many comedians come from a dark place, and there's so much hardship or self-induced hardship on them that they come from a world of hurt, seemingly to me, mm-hmm. and just want to go out and make people laugh. But in just sitting here talking to you, I mean, you just seem, hey man, straight up.
I am straight up, but you know what though, Steve, that is still the case with me.
Yeah.
I do come from a big world of hurt. There is a lot of issues and pain and frustration that comes with the guy that's sitting in front of you right now.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with a dad. It was my mom, single parent. And there's a lot of issues that have, built up throughout the years through siblings, through relationships that went wrong, or just, you know, the need to feel accepted.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, when you become an entertainer of any type, there's a certain need that you want to be accepted. You want to be loved. You want to be appreciated. Maybe it's not something that you got from school or from your siblings early on in life or from your parents. You want to find that acceptance. You want to find that feeling that's right. When I go out on stage every night in front of people and they're laughing and we're going back and forth, that is the greatest feeling in the world. It's the greatest feeling in the world when they laugh, when they cheer, when they roar. And then I get off stage and I'm in a green room in the back on a couch by myself and I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? This is such a fucking lonely feeling right now. I wish I was back out on that stage where everybody appreciates you and wants you and it cheers for you and makes you feel great.
Talk about the come down when I would go out there and the glass would break, you know, you could be having the shittiest, you know, day of your life. And like, goddamn, I'm tired of being on the road and this, that, whatever's going on. All of a sudden that glass breaks and people go, shh, crazy. It's like, shit's on, man. I don't give a flap how bad a day I got. You know, this is my time right now. Go out there and raise hell with a guy in a squared circle, 20 by 20, and taking them on a ride, telling a story of a bald-headed guy with a goatee and black trunks, black boots, who's pissed off and laying down whoop-ass in the ring, but telling a story and entertaining. You know, and many times we'd go, you know, off the air or dark, you know, after Monday Night Raw and go back out there and entertain those people, mm-hmm. like you were talking about, and give them their money's worth, but just, you know, wanting to get that feedback from them.
It's such an amazing feeling when you're back, you know, in the green room or the backstage or in the locker room. It's just the satisfaction from that is so great. People cannot truly appreciate that until you're doing it. You know, people don't totally understand that, like the level of acceptance that you get. It's like a drug.
But the adrenaline spike.
When
you go out
there
and you start your show, you know, versus, you know, or along with my glass shattering, boom, there I go. But then, and that is what it is. And it's satisfaction on every level that you can imagine. But then when you go back, that's when everything stops. And it's like, okay, you know, dude, chill out. First off, just warm, you know, cool down, take a shower. And then, you know, back in the day, you know, we wasn't making no money. As you know, mm-hmm. you were traveling, bunch of motherfuckers in a car because you got to split that tab, you know, in the rental car, the gas, this, that, whatever. So then finally you're riding solo. And I'm a loner. So I always traveled by myself. After I started getting hot, I traveled by myself. But then it was the come down. How long does it take you to wind down after a show is my question, because you're coming off an adrenaline spike. You accept it. I mean, because I come from, I was a shy kid coming up. So, you know, and, you know, middle class family, no hardships, no whatever, mm-hmm. but a shy kid. But all of a sudden, you know, there's everything. I'm stone cold. I finally made it to the top of that goddamn mountain. And now it's a come down and you're just riding down the road and back in. You know, this is back in the day when you could drive down the road and drink a beer. And, you know, it took me, you know, I don't know, 1-2 hours just to come down and to, you know, come into peace. You too?
You know what? When I get off that stage and there's a that roar, and then my buddy goes back out there and he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, one more time for Mr. Gabriel Iglesias." And the roar that I get from that, it's an amazing feeling, man. I'm telling you guys that feeling could cure anything. After the show is over, I go in the back and I'm drenched in sweat. You know, I got a towel. I'm trying to clean my face. I'm like, wow, that was amazing. They felt it, you know, and, I'll do meet and greets sometimes after the shows. And then you come up, you get these people and they just look at you and they give you this look like, man, you know what? I'm going through this stuff right now. And they come up to you and they say, look, I'm going through, problems with my family. I'm going through problems with my relationship. I'm dealing with issues with health. I have a friend or a loved one who's dealing with cancer, dealing with a terminal illness. And you know what? I brought them and they left hard. Harder than they've ever laughed. Thank you. And the feeling from that is just, you feel, and I'm not trying to compare the two, but I mean, you seriously, you feel like a god for those 2-3 seconds when those people are talking to you.
That you was like, able to take them out of a real deal situation.
I'm doing something right.
Right. Right.
I'm doing something right. And I got to keep this going as long as I can keep it going.
DDP said you was a big wrestling fan.
Huge. And I'm not trying to mark out in front of you, which is why I'm drinking as much as I'm drinking right now, because I'm like, I'm trying not to just totally go off.
But before we wrap up, I know you're on a tight schedule. You're going to do a show here pretty quick.
Let's see. What time is it right now? Yeah. I'll sober up in 5 hours. Yeah, I'll be okay. Can I do a little whoring?
Oh, yeah. I got you whore stuff okay. here. But you whore first.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
I'm going to put a condom on real quick.
First thing, hey, put that rubber on, Steve, because it's about to get crazy.
Magnum.
Steve, you have an amazing social network presence. If you guys, I'm a huge wrestling fan. If you want to quiz me on anything, I promise you will not be disappointed. I've been to the last 5 WrestleManias. I used to freaking stay up late at night with my mom and watch primetime wrestling with Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon at my house. We'd steal cable and watch the USA Network, and that's how we do it every single week. And I mean, you know, I was watching the Monday Night Wars. I was going back and forth from WCW to freaking ECW in Philadelphia and WWF at the time. You have no idea, Steve. I mean, Steve, I brought Steve with. Steve is actually one of the best friends of Roddy Piper, and I didn't want to throw that out there, but I'm drunk, so I don't care. And
you're not driving, right?
No, hell no. Okay. I'm Alfred's going to drive.
Okay, all right, Alfred.
Alfred confirm. And I, we stalked you. We were there the weekend of WrestleMania 2009 when you got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And this knucklehead and myself, we got all drunk, and we started stalking you at the Marriott because we just wanted you to autograph his championship belt.
Did
and
I?
It was great. And I met you for 2 seconds, and you know what? I get the game, so you know what? I just want to get in, say hi, take a picture, and leave because I don't want to fuck with you. I got a couple pictures with you, but you know what? You were the nicest dude, and I just want everybody to know that even in those times, Stevie didn't know who the hell I was. I've met you probably about 9 times, and in those 9 times that I've met you, all I expected was just that initial, hi, how you doing, man? Good. Take a picture. You'd always smile. You weren't an ass to me. There was a lot of people that I met in the past that you know, people of success, and I just wanted to take a picture and say hi, and they treated me like, you know, whatever. But you were always a solid, straight-up guy. You've always been exactly the person who's sitting in front of me, and I always appreciated that. This guy is a mark. That guy's a mark. And you're sitting in front of one of the biggest marks in the game. I've got 3 championship belts at my house. My whole game room looks like freaking the WWE and WCW threw up in a living room. I couldn't be more excited and more happy of the fact that I'm taking these Ezekiel 4.9 tortillas to my car. And hopefully you autograph it and say, hey, I'm not eating this shit, and that's the bottom line.
Hi, everyone. This is JT Rogan from Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Each week, I co-host the show with coaches Jack and Jim Harbaugh. Join us this week as we welcome University of Michigan defensive coordinator, our very own Don Brown, to the show to talk about what we saw in the Super Bowl.
I didn't really look back on this. There were no mistakes. I didn't see any coaching mistakes, didn't see any player mistakes. Even the game-turning plays were great plays, you know, made by an offensive player or made by a defensive player. That's why I say it was a magnificent football game.
We'll talk offense, defense, special teams, covering Rob Gronkowski, coin tosses, and so much more. You can listen to this episode, past episodes, and all new episodes each Tuesday for free, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the new Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes and write a review to tell us what you think of the show. Most importantly, keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Jenny, people sent us some questions. Now that we're through telling some stories, let's answer a few questions.
Okay.
It's because of Jonathan Myers down in Santa Claus, Indiana. How would you name a town Santa Claus? Anyway, Steve, you mentioned your Chevy Z71 on numerous occasions, but I can't recall what year it is. That's a 2003. P.S. If I could get another shout-out from my wife, Kendra, it would make her day again. You gave her a shout-out on a podcast right after WrestleMania 30, and she absolutely loved it. Hey, Jonathan, you motherfucker. I gave your wife, Kendra, a shout-out. I'm going to give her another shout-out. Hey, Kendra, it's Steve Austin. How are you doing? Hey, Jonathan, stop sending these bogus emails asking me what year model my truck is. That was a setup so you get another shout-out for your wife. You better get a or something out of this. Teddy,
yep.
Next time you and Teddy are answering questions, here's one I don't think you guys have ever answered. Teddy talks about playing golf sometimes, but has never said what kind of clubs he plays. So, Teddy, what's in the bag?
You know what? My driver's a TaylorMade, like an XI4 or something like that. Hell, I don't even know. And the clubs I've got are just a Ping knockoff that I had made for me, custom length. Yeah, but I don't shoot a name brand. No,
so you ain't swinging no high dollar.
No.
I brought my first set of clubs. I was living out there in Douglasville, Georgia, at a garage sale. I was pretty goddamn good. I remember, I think, the best score I had, I shot a 55 on a 9-hole course. I thought I was on fire. I just thought I was on fire. Of course, that's not worth a shit. But for me, at the time, it was. And then, you know, a few years later, I gave up golf and haven't taken it up yet. Again, I like to go out every now and then and just go to driving range and knock the dog shit out of a few of them. But, you know, hell, I get there about a bucket of balls maybe, and I'm bored and ready to move on to the next thing. But, you know, when you crack a good one,
oh yeah,
and finally that son of a bitch doesn't slice right or hook left and just go straight, just just a screamer, like Adam Sandler hitting Happy Madison or whatever the Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore.
It's Happy Madison's movie company.
Right.
Goddamn, when you hit one of those screamers, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
And just the feeling. Kind of like when we were shooting that gong that you bought me the other day.
Right,
that metal silhouette target. It's the same feeling.
Well, dude, I got that T-box at the house. You know what I mean? I get a kick out of – I've got 2 5-gallon buckets full of Callaway X-Out range balls. You know, I got drunk and bought them off of eBay. You know, you can get 300 used golf balls for $50. Throw them out on that, you know, T-box I made and hit them over the water. You know, I got a couple of flag sticks, 2 different distances. Got one of those little pickup deals so I don't have to bend over and pick them up. I just walk around there and, you know, scoop them up. And I get a kick out of that, you know, take a couple of beers out there and hit, you know, 100 golf balls and go back inside the house.
You know, see, dude, if I would just do it at my crib like that.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I could sit out here and run for a long time.
Yeah, same thing with shooting my bow. You know, I can just walk out the back of the house. And I've got, you know, Mackenzie target, I've got hay bales, all that stuff there. And I can just, you know, fling either my compound or my crossbow, you know, do whatever, turn around and go back in the house. Yeah, but I mean, if you got to drive somewhere to go do that, no. Shit,
see,
no.
Here's the thing. Back in the day when I used to play golf, one of my outlaw days, see, like I'd go to the range and I'd pick up a bunch of red stripe balls. I'm that guy. Globe icon and a national treasure. They put that red stripe or whatever color stripe they use on those golf balls to mark them as range balls. And so, like, everybody out there playing with Nike or Taylor or whatever the golf ball names are.
Right.
Hey, man, where's my ball at? What are the brands?
Well, Titleist Pro V. I shoot a Nike. Yeah. But there's Callaway, there's
all the good shit.
Yeah,
and it's Steve, is this Taylor yours? No, might as well the red stripe. man, it's a range ball. I don't give a fuck. It's my ball. I picked it up. It's my ball. That's what I'm playing with. And see, it don't make a shit whether I'm hitting the highest dollar golf ball or the range ball. It's going to go to the same place, wherever the fuck I hit it.
That's the ball you use when you're teeing off over water. You're not too sure if you can make it, and you don't want to sink, you know, a $7 ball.
Yeah, for your first shot that you'll claim as a mulligan if you don't make it. So if you make it, then you put your tailor back down. Yeah.
You invoke the lift, clean, and replace rule, where if your ball has an impediment on it, a spot of mud, you can pick it up in the fairway, wipe it off, and that's when you do the old switcheroo. You take the range ball out of play.
Dude, the golf ball, same thing with the pool cue, the golf clubs, it's the same shit, man. See those guys walking into the pool hall with their little case, screw the cue together. They're probably about $500 a grand in that cue, I don't know. And then there's an old boy over in the back using that cue right off the wall. Crooked as a motherfucker. You know how you always check out a pool cue? You roll it across the table. And he just chalks it up, breaks them. And all of a sudden, he takes everybody to town. Mm-hmm. You know, after, you know, $300-$400 later, the guy unscrews his stick, puts it back in the box, and walks out the damn hall with $300 or $400 left out in the bar and his tail between his legs.
Right. Dude, that's one thing we haven't done is shot pool. I don't think we've been anywhere with pool table.
Dude, you don't want to be anywhere near me with a pool table, because if you beat me, I will hit you with a pool cue. It's an ongoing story out here, because I got one of those arcade dartboards out here that rings up the score for you. And I had that thing a long time ago. It's still here, but I gave it to Ted. And I said, shit, man, you got a dart game? Because I thought I was pretty good. And he goes, yeah, I played a time or two. I'm fixing to kick his mother's ass. And that son of a bitch proceeded to strum me like a 6-string guitar. Boy, I was madder than a goddamn hornet. And drunk on top of that, I thought we was going to go to fighting. You know, we'd shake hands after every goddamn game, because you've got to be good sports about it. But I never forgot it. And so this year, I gave Ted the dartboard, and I'm just waiting for him to take her home. Tried to rope me into playing the other day. My nephew was out here the other day. Ted tried to get me to play the other day. He got to poking my nephew Neil, who was out here. And Neil came up to me and goes, Uncle Steve, what about that dartboard over there? He goes, can we play tonight? I said, no, man. I said, and Ted was over there kind of not looking so he could see if I was going to get roped in. Man, I was way too smart for that shit. I said, Neil, I said, that's Ted's dartboard. If you want to go play darts with Ted, go ahead. I said, I ain't got nothing to do with that muffin.
Remember the deal early on in the season with the zip ties? Remember that? Yeah, you said you can take all them zip ties with you when you take the goddamn dartboard.
I didn't know how to jerry-rig a zip tie. You can't even explain that on a podcast.
No.
Let's move on to another question. God damn it. Steve, I hear you mention you don't sleep well. I also struggle with having a good night's sleep. Do you or have you tried any natural sleep aids? What do you feel up to snuff during the day? Caffeine, supplements, etc.? You just used to feeling tired. Zach in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I ain't never tried too many things as far as natural sleep aids at work. Quite frankly, I prefer prescription grade. I do require a prescription pill to go to sleep. I'm like a light switch. I'm either on or I'm off. As far as filling up to snuff during the day, hey, man, when you've been beat up for 14 years hitting the head with steel chairs and you wake up, that's going to be a good day. So I drink my two cups of coffee. It's not like I need a bunch of amphetamines and sniff glue to have a good day. I don't really feel tired during the day. There's a period of the day about, 3-4 o'clock out here just because of the schedule we're on. I like to take a little 30-minute cat nap, but no, man, I'm good. Melatonin I used to be a big fan of, but doesn't really work for me anymore. But I just, it is what it is. I'm used to it. I've been doing this shit for 52 years. I got it down pretty good. Teddy, you ain't got no sleep problems, do you?
No, dude, I sleep like a baby.
Well, speaking of babies, here's a question for you. That had nothing to do with the baby, does it? Hey, Steve, I love listening to your podcast. They brighten my day so much. Thank you. You're welcome. This question is regarding your friend, Ted Fowler. I noticed on his Twitter account he's following tattoo-related accounts such as Beautifully Tattooed and Hot Ink Girls. Does Ted just enjoy women with tattoos, or does he have an interest in tattoos himself? Does Ted have any tattoos? Paul Yates, Scotland. Tell me about Beautifully Tattooed and Hot Ink Girls.
Oh, dude. Yeah, no, I dig chicks with tattoos.
Yes?
Yeah, I mean, I've got half a dozen tattoos myself. No, dude, they're, it's interesting to look at. I like beautiful women. I like beautiful women with tattoos. And both of those Twitter accounts have them. God damn. Dude, I gotta keep on top of my game.
I'm trying to find another goddamn email.
Well, that was out of left field there.
Casey Daniels, best way to avoid a hangover, stay drunk. Love it. Yeah, Casey, it's a shoot. I ain't lying to you. Here's a question. Hey, Steve and Ted, I was listening to the show the other week, and you mentioned some of the awful films that you've done. But The Condemned is one hell of a film, and you're a bona fide badass in it. But what's your condition to Michael Jai White? Were you friends before your films? Oh, and Ted, I don't know if you're involved in much woodwork, but what, in your professional opinion, is the best finish for a raw pine or a pool cue case, i.e. wax, varnish, etc.? Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Lay B from Nottingham, UK. First of all, The Condemned was a badass movie. And yeah, I was pretty much a rock star in that movie, and I'm blowing smoke up my ass. Yeah, I could have done a couple scenes better, but what the fuck is my first movie? As far as Michael Jai White goes, man, I've been a Michael Jai White fan for a long time, just as far as his martial arts skills. Michael is one of the smartest people you'll ever work with. Tells stories all day long, very charismatic, and very knowledgeable in many fighting systems. So, man, he's just a badass dude. But you're right, The Condemned. I got robbed that year for best actor and best film. Teddy, what's the best finish for raw pine? Like if someone's going to make a pool cue case or whatever, they're saying like i.e. wax or varnish, etc.
Remember those little jewelry boxes that I made?
Yep.
And I was making, and I'm still am making with a crazy wood. I like to stain them, and the finish that I like to use is a hand rub wax made by Minwax. You rub it on, rub it off, that type of deal. And then I will take an orbital buffer and buff that wax off so it's not sticky, it's not tacky. Man, that finish, you're not going to scratch it, doesn't show fingerprints, easy to maintain, and it's not glossy, it doesn't shine. I hate wood that is real super shiny like that.
Okay, with that being said, and you're still making these boxes, mm-hmm. why don't you make an eBay account and sell the mufflers on eBay?
Dude, why don't we go dove hunting tomorrow? I ain't got time for that shit. Dude, I'll tell you what. I'll throw some boxes up. We'll call them Broken Skull Jewelry Boxes. I'll cut you in for, I don't know, 30%.
We got to renegotiate.
Dude, that's good mailbox money. You're sitting there in Marina Del Rey going to the mailbox. Got another check from Teddy.
What are we going to sell these things for? $1,000 a piece?
The big ones.
Hey, Steve, how do you spend your time while recuperating from surgery during most of the year 2000? I drank like a goddamn fish. I drove to Sonic in my hard neck brace, almost choked to death on a jalapeno burger. I drank a lot of beer, and I just fiddled around. That's exactly what I did. Nothing much has changed.
Except the neck brace.
Yeah, I'm not rocking the neck brace anymore, but other than that. Hey, Steve, what were your thoughts when Vince announced the XFL? Also, what did you think of the product at the time? What do you think looking back? Man, I asked Vince why he wanted to compete against the NFL. And he said, man, Steve, I want to give people football the way that football should be given to them. He had a different vision of it, a different version of it. And many people have said, had not, they pulled the plug a year sooner than they were supposed to, maybe it would have made it. I don't know. I thought it was a real big gamble, a real big risk. It didn't pan out. But had he got that extra year, who knows what would have happened. I was a big fan of it. They didn't have quite the athletes that the NFL does, of course. But the product was what it was. They tried to bring, football with a little bit more, a different spin to it, a little more titillation to it, with the cheerleaders and stuff like that. Hey, looking back, here's the thing I always give Vince McMahon credit for. He's got, if he wants to try something, he ain't scared to try it. ICO Pro Bodybuilding, the WBF, XFL, his calling card is pro wrestling, sports entertainment. That's what he's the best at. That's what he's the king at. He's tried some of these other things and done so well at them. But goddamn, when it came to pro wrestling, sports entertainment, he knocked it out of the park and put everybody out of business. So, do you ever remember watching XFL?
I vaguely remember that. I mean, I'm not a huge football fan anyway, but yes, I do. I do remember. But I couldn't tell you, how long it was on.
Man, here's a good question from Juan Mariscal. You send me a lot of questions, Juan. I see you on Twitter all the time. What's your advice for cutting social media usage? I'm pretty sure I'm addicted. First thing I do when I wake up and last thing I do before I go to bed is check Facebook. I also annoyingly check my phone constantly when I'm out to dinner with my girlfriend and or family and friends. I've known a couple of people who every time they do something, they got to post it on Facebook so that the whole world can see what the fuck they're doing. I've been out to my little sushi restaurant with my wife, Kristen. When I walk into a restaurant, I put my phone on silent, and when we sit down at the table, I turn it upside down so that I can't see it. If there's a chance that my wife may go to the bathroom, or if she has a call or something coming in because we're remodeling our house or whatever, and she picks up her phone, I'll check to see if I have any messages or I've missed any calls or whatever because I'm actually doing business. I'm not on my vacation out here at the Broken Skull Ranch. I can't stand when I see there's a couple at our sushi restaurant. It happens all the time. Hell, I don't even know why the motherfuckers go to dinner together because the whole time he's typing on his iPhone or whatever gimmick phone and she's doing the same. And then the food comes and in between they eat. And if they got kids, the kids got iPads or whatever you call them and they're playing video games. And so it's a total cluster. A lot of people are hung up on that social media bullshit. With Twitter, man, I try to read all my mentions. I don't read all the other stuff. I try to be as diligent as I can about it. Out here at the ranch, I've really been trying to work on Instagram. But on Twitter, I try to see what's going on. I got to keep up with something
right.
That's going on in the world.
Right.
But it, man, dude, you just put that shit down, and you can't let it run. You can't let it rule or ruin your life. Goddamn, you ain't got to tell everybody what you do, or post everything what you do, or give up what everybody else is doing. Some of these people, Teddy, I just want, I see how many texts or messages they've gotten. It's just like an ungodly number. I dig it. I'm into it. I use it. It's a tool, and I can stay in touch with my, with people that I follow and people that follow me. But I do enough of it that but I'm not addicted to it. Are you?
No, not at all. I mean, when I get up in the morning, I check and see, you know, what's going on now. During deer season, when I'm out here, it's different than, you know, when I'm back in Rockport. I mean, here we're posting, or I'm posting, you know, pictures of animals and sunset and, you know, snakes and shit like that to let everybody know, you know, what's going on out here and what we're dealing with. You know, but once I go back to Rockport, then it's just mainly, you know, after the workday. I mean, I don't screw around with that shit. I mean, I may post a picture or two if I'm at a job site, if something happens, like when I, you know, ran that screw through my shoe and, you know, the shit about the hard hat. But no, I'm not addicted to it. I'll check it at night. You know, I try to respond to people when they ask me questions, you know, legitimate questions about, you know, shit that goes on out here in construction. But I'm not addicted to it. But, dude, you know.
But that being said, social media has changed the lives of a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely, I mean, correct.
Motherfuckers just walking down L.A. in any town, USA, with their face glued to the phone. They got to put something out there and get a response, instant validation. It's really strange. I like social media. But, man, and you want to stay on top of it because you're always, you know, spinning the next thing. Man, I take it for what it is. It's a tool, but
dude, here's the thing I don't get. And Kristen kind of halfway broke it down for me, but the selfies that people post, just, you know, one after another after another after another after another. I mean, you know, dude, I don't get that part. I mean, are you trying to get modeling gigs? If so, I would think you would be with an agency of some sort, or, you know, that relentless self-promotion is, you know, I don't get it.
Hey, man, but to me, if I was on the single scene, and all of a sudden, hey, man, I asked this girl to go out, and maybe we go out to eat, and all of a sudden, I'm sitting across from her table, and she's on her damn phone the whole goddamn time. What I'm thinking is, well, this is about the last time this shit's going to happen. And vice versa. Well, I wouldn't be stupid enough to do this, but if I was to take my wife out and I just sit there and I'm on the phone the whole fucking time, boy, I tell you what, I'm going to hear about it later, or I'm disrespecting my wife, and it's just not polite and not proper etiquette, and so I don't do it.
Dude, separate checks, you know. You go out with a girl for, you know, a dinner, like me. You know, take a chick out, and she's fiddling around on her phone the whole time. You know, Jesus, I'm out. Hope you're, you know, contact an Uber, because I'm out of here. Jesus.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Thanks again for listening to this Best Of edition of the Steve Austin Show. Check out Steve on ProWrestlingTees.com. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin to check out all the shirts Steve has worn on previous seasons of the Broken Skull Challenge. And if you're thirsty, check out the best damn IPA on the planet. That's Broken Skull IPA at El Segundo Brewing Company. You can get Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. If you're not in California, check InsideTheCellar.com and see if they ship to your state. Be sure to support all of Steve's sponsors at PodcastOne.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page, and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on Tuesday.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of the Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.